listening to the Primary Medicine Podcast with Kevin and Dimitri, bringing you the best in primary care CME that you can use in your everyday practice. Hey everyone, my name is Kevin Milo, and I'm an emergency physician based out of Edmonton, Alberta. Dimitri and I are bringing you some great cases and some great education. As always, we keep it fun, we keep it light, and we keep it short because there's no point in overwhelming all of us with too much information. So this week, what we're doing is hypocalcemia, not hypercalcemia, hypocalcemia, so low calcium. Specifically, we're going to be covering the treatment of hypocalcemia and the relevant electrolyte disorders that go with that, as well as when to treat, because it's not just enough to know how to treat, but know when to treat and what levels of resuscitation you need if the patient is very sick versus something that's a little less intense if the patient is asymptomatic. What we will not be covering on this month's podcast is calcium metabolism and physiology. Ugh, I felt like we all got a lot of that in medical school. Those are some big deep dives, and I'd like to cover them on another podcast, but I'm not going to do it this week. We'll also not be covering the diagnostic approach to hypocalcemia. Again, very useful, very relevant, but too broad for today. So today we are strictly focusing on the treatment of hypocalcemia. Before we get going, I'm going to make a couple of quick notes on calcium. Again, I promise to keep it light. I'm not going to overwhelm you, and I'm not an electrolytes guy. So that's why I think it's useful for listeners who are not electrolytes people themselves. A couple of notes, here they are. Number one, it's useful to have serum albumin when assessing and treating hypo or hypercalcemia, because as you know, albumin affects total amount of calcium that's present, because calcium is highly protein bound. The other issue is that we will be using SI units. I know we do have some American listeners out there. Yikes. Unfortunately, I'm sorry we can't cover imperial units, but we will cover SI units, and those are 2.2 to 2.6 is normal total serum calcium. Again, 2.2 to 2.6 millimoles per liter is normal total serum calcium levels. The ionized levels are 1.05 to 1.3. Okay, and both of those are relevant. You can look them up as you're listening to this podcast, but I thought I would just include them as a bit of a reference and starting point. Okay, so let's move on. Again, we're covering the treatment of hypocalcemia, of low calcium. We're going to keep it short, we're going to keep it focused, and I'm going to start with the case. The case is a lovely 73-year-old woman that I had actually seen some months prior for a massive but slow oozing GI bleed where her hemoglobin actually gone down to 30. At any rate, that's not too relevant. That's just a little bit of context. I happen to know this lovely lady. And while she was admitted for her anemia and GI bleed, she was found to have chronic kidney disease but of no known etiology. And the bottom line is that she saw me again in the emerge. It's one of the things I love about community emergency practice is that I get to know a lot of my patients, the ones that come in frequently. I actually get to know them and develop a rapport. So she had had a recent gastroenteritis, some vomiting, some diarrhea, but it really decreased her oral intake. She lives alone, has few supports, and she's a very pleasant lady, but not the type to go to doctors. And so when I had given her some IV crystalloid and some rehydration, she'd started to feel better, but I got her electrolyte panel back. And things were very abnormal. Her magnesium was extremely low at 0.23. Her potassium was fairly low at 2.6. And the venous blood gas, thankfully we have calcium on venous blood gases as well as total calcium through our regular laboratory analysis. But her venous blood gas ionized calcium was 0.86, so significantly lower than 1.05 as a sort of a minimum there. And she was somewhat symptomatic in terms of having some fatigue and some paresthesias. Now, Before we go any further, I want to stop listeners right there, and I want to just go back to calcium in general terms. And here's the big one. When we talk about calcium and when it's low, when does it cause problems for people? And in which ways does it cause problems? Number one, there is no specific number. Like all electrolyte disorders, it depends not only on the absolute value of that electrolyte and whether it will cause any symptoms, but on how long it's been occurring for. Because if this is a chronic process, your patients are going to tolerate very abnormal electrolytes. If this, however, is acute, then they're less likely to tolerate those. But in terms of when do we pull the trigger and start resuscitative emergent treatment, Dimitri, do you have any broad categories of how potassium might kill you? Or kill your patients, I should say, when it's low?
Calcium might kill you. I mean, to me, I always worry about issues with heart rhythm.
Yep.
I think it prolongs your QT. I think that's one of the major issues, so you can go into an arrhythmia, a deadly arrhythmia.
Outstanding. Yeah, and I keep it, again, really simple because there are so many electrolyte abnormalities out there and so many EKG changes that occur with those electrolyte abnormalities that I do prefer to keep it simple. Here's the bottom line. When it comes to calcium and electrolytes more broadly, is they cause cardiac abnormalities. The heart is a very complex electrophysiologic structure, and the reality is that electrolyte changes cause conduction disturbances that result not only in arrhythmias, but dysfunction of the myocardium itself. So decreases in contractility, decreases in rate, but then can also deteriorate into terminal arrhythmias. Prolonged QT, torsade, VTAC, cardiac arrest, all of these things. So that's excellent, Dimitri. Number one, hypocalcemia is lethal to patients through cardiac arrhythmias. Number two, it causes seizures. Those are the two big things to watch out for. There are lots of signs and symptoms and complications associated with low calcium, hypocalcemia. But the big ones are in the head in terms of seizures and cardiac arrhythmias. Everything from some minor conduction disturbances and changes to rate all the way on to full-on cardiac arrest. Okay, so let's move on. We've got our lady in front of us. She's had a recent diarrheal illness in the setting of an unknown chronic kidney disease. She doesn't know what it's from. I don't have any letters from a consultant that I can look over and see. Okay, but here she is, the patient in front of us in the emergency department with low calcium that needs to be fixed. So when is hypocalcemia an emergency or an urgency? So we touched on seizures, we touched on cardiac arrhythmias, but there are some other subtler signs to look for. There's Schwellstedt's sign, which is tapping on the cranial nerves as they come out of the facial bones along the cheeks there, and you're going to get this kind of funny wry smile or movement of the facial muscles. So again, that's cranial nerve 7. Okay, and then there's Trousseau's sign, where, again, these are all classics going back to medical school and you know, clinical skills in medical school and the textbooks and things like that, where you inflate the blood pressure cuff and they start to get this carpopedal spasm. All right? Tetany would be another finding. And again, seizures or any disturbances you're going to see on EKG. One of the most discerning tests that you can do, okay, at the bedside in the emergency department, or if you're fortunate to have this in your, you know, family medicine clinic, is to do an EKG. And the big, big thing you're going to look for on EKG is prolonged QTC interval. And I always sort of keep 500 as the correct QTC that I begin to worry about. Okay? We're not going to go into any great length on the signs and symptoms of hypocalcemia or the EKG findings of that. That's, again, for another talk that we'd like to do in the future. But the big, big one is just know that you need an EKG to sort of assess some of this sense of urgency, as well as your history is going to give you a sense of urgency as well. Now, what to do in a true hypocalcemia, emergency? If they are having seizures, or they're in cardiac arrest territory, or they've got a very abnormal EKG, okay, and you're worried this patient is going to further deteriorate on you, go ahead and do the following. Get them on the monitor. Get two peripheral IVs, start giving them fluids, and then start giving them calcium gluconate. Calcium gluconate 1 gram over 10 to 20 minutes. Go. Just start with that. That's your opener. You can, if you're worried, stretch it out to 20 minutes. But remember that it's a very transient improvement in the patient's calcium status. Because again, remembering that calcium is highly protein bound, you're going to give calcium gluconate, and then you're going to see a transient improvement in their calcium, maybe a transient improvement on them in terms of the electrophysiology of the heart. So, you know, normalizing rhythm, or maybe their seizures will stop. I mean, if you're lucky. Okay. But the reality is that's going to be gone very shortly once that calcium becomes highly protein bound and the effective ionized calcium concentration floating around once again drops. So be robust in your treatment of hypocalcemia. If this is an emergency and you are worried about, you know, cardiac arrest, cardiac arrhythmias, they're seizing or they did seize, then go ahead and give 3 amps back to back, each over 10 minutes or each over 20 minutes, but get a good amount of calcium gluconate in there. And again, 1 amp, at least in, you know, Canadian terms, is 1 gram of calcium gluconate. Okay. Caution with calcium chloride, only because it causes the veins to sclerose, and so you don't want to lose your peripheral IVs. But again, if you're in a tight spot and that's what you have, go ahead and give it, because it's going to buy you time. Remember as well that, you know, if they're hypocalcemic and, you know, they're hyper, you know, kalemic, this is also going to be beneficial in this regards. Okay. And remember that you're going to check the other electrolytes as well. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit further down here with regards to our case. So what if the patient now is not in a true emergency? They're not seizing. You don't worry they're imminently at risk of having a cardiac arrest or have had one. Okay. What if they're stable but really quite low? So they've got very low calcium. If they've got some minor symptoms, paresthesias, okay, but they otherwise appear well compensated, all right, maybe they're complaining of some fatigue, maybe you can do a Schvostex sign on them or trousseaus, then go ahead and treat them, but to treat them robustly, okay, so that you can improve it. And remember to also get ionized calcium and albumin levels, one to assess whether there truly is a calcium emergency here or urgency, but two, to also guide treatment and to help your consultants down the road. So if you're in the emergency department, here are the broad treatment approaches to hypocalcemia. Number one, start with oral calcium. And you can use calcium carbonate, but just start with something. I used Tums on this lady because we didn't have calcium carbonate at the time. And just go ahead, give them some calcium carbonate, and start that oral absorption process. The nice thing is that that's going to support your efforts through the IV with your patient whose hypocalcemia you're trying to correct. Calcium carbonate can be started somewhere low, around, you know, 500 milligrams orally 3 times a day, but that can be increased. But that's a good starting point. If you're giving calcium through the IV, because you really, like in the case of this woman, the 73-year-old woman that I had, I was keen to fix her, not completely, but get her to a point where her calcium was substantially improved so that I could get her going home at a reasonable time, because this does take some effort. So I did go ahead and give her IV calcium gluconate. And what I did was I gave 1 gram IV over an hour, and I repeated that twice for a total of 3 grams over 3 hours. Again, very straightforward. Keep it simple. While patients are getting IV calcium, it's useful to have them on cardiac monitor. Every hospital is different. Everyone's got different nursing protocols. But again, I try not to make things worse as one of the cornerstones of my practice, because remembering that unless it's an emergency with an electrolyte disorder, whether it's calcium, whether it's potassium, whether it's sodium, unless it's an emergency, you really don't need to rush. And in fact, you'll do your patients harm if you are too aggressive and either give something too quickly or you give too much for too long and you overshoot the mark. I've seen it done with potassium. I've seen it done with sodium. I've seen it done with magnesium. I've seen it done with everything. And so What's guided me is the fact that my patient in front of me, who is otherwise stable, they and their myocardium and their nervous system have managed to compensate up until this moment with their electrolyte disorder. So I don't need to make it worse by suddenly shifting them in the wrong direction too aggressively. So what I do is, again, I just go nice and slowly with these people, okay? But I correct them in a robust fashion. So oral calcium carbonate or Tums, start with, and 3 good doses of calcium gluconate, 1 gram IV, each over an hour. And I remember that it's important to treat the other electrolytes. So it's very difficult, and again, I'm not going into all of the physiology behind this, to correct certain electrolyte disorders while other ones are present. So I treat them all concurrently, and that's why it's useful to have at least 2 peripheral IVs. So in the case of Our Lady, not only was her calcium very low, but so was her magnesium. Her magnesium was 0.23, which is very, very low, but also her potassium was quite low. So I went ahead and corrected those orally and in the IV concurrent with my efforts on calcium. Again, there's some, you know, complex exchange, ion exchange, you know, proteins in the kidney and things like that, and you know, intracellular versus extracellular shifts and all of these. And again, let's not get into that, but remember only that what we're wanting to do here is treat these as well as treating the primary electrolyte disturbance, or the one that you think is the most prominent in terms of the patient's symptoms. Okay, so those are the cornerstones of the IV treatment and the oral treatment in the emergency department. But remember that whether you're a family doctor, whether you're a rural physician, whether you're an emergency physician, you're going to want to go ahead and cue things up for your consultant so that when he or she gets this patient, you know, in follow-up, that all the right tests are going to be ordered, that the patient's going to be on the right medications and the right treatment. So in terms of this woman specifically, and again, I'm not getting into all of the diagnosis and treatment, but I went ahead and ordered some additional tests on this patient because she had chronic kidney disease and she was going to need to see a nephrologist. What the thinking was between myself and the internist that I consulted on the phone was that this patient was probably acute on chronic hypocalcemia, and that the underlying cause of her chronic hypocalcemia was likely related to chronic kidney disease. Therefore, I ordered a few additional tests. Okay. Obviously, almost all the time, we're ordering serum creatinine and urea, okay, but also parathyroid hormone levels, vitamin D levels, phosphate levels, urine electrolytes, urine osmolality as well. So that when I, and then, of course, referring this patient on to a nephrologist or whatever specialist is going to be deemed necessary, but that way, he or she has as much information as possible when they're off to see your patient. And I think that that's excellent. That's what we should be doing, right? It's, you know, a technician can fix numbers in the hospital, but what we really need to do is at least get the ball rolling for our consultants. Not only does that speed up patient care, but that really goes a long way to, you know, improving patient care. The other things you need to do is you need to support their chronic diseases, whether that's chronic liver disease, whether that's chronic kidney disease, whether that's encouraging good nutrition, go ahead and do all of those things. When you discharge your patient from the emergency department, or let's say they're asymptomatic but they have low calcium and they never were in the emergency department, as a family doctor, as the emergency physician, the scripts you're going to want to write for your hypocalcemic patient are going to be some form of oral calcium repletion. So as I alluded to, calcium carbonate, so 500 milligrams PO 3 times a day, as well as either vitamin D at a robust dose, minimum of 1,000 units a day, or you can go to activated vitamin D, which is Rocaltrol at 0.5 milligrams per day for the first week, or 25 micrograms per day, you know, and continue that on. But do something to enhance the uptake and utilization of that calcium. And again, remembering to encourage your patients to take in, you know, a well-balanced diet in the setting of these kinds of electrolyte abnormalities. So again, we're going to keep it simple. I'm going to summarize things very quickly and succinctly. When you have low calcium, you need to confirm it with a serum albumin correction and an ionized calcium if possible. When the patient's calcium is low, you need to put them on a monitor if you're worried about them having significant deterioration, and you need to get an EKG to assess particularly QTC interval. When you start correcting them in the setting of an emergency, either a seizure, risk of a seizure, or risk of malignant cardiac arrhythmias, go ahead and give them 1 amp calcium gluconate over 10 to 20 minutes. And again, calcium gluconate, 1 amp in more proper terms is 1 gram IV over 10 to 20 minutes. If that's all you remember, remember that for an emergency when you've got hypocalcemia. If the patient's calcium is low, but they're really complaining of only minor things, there's no EKG changes, you're not concerned about the risk of, seizure or cardiac arrhythmias, then go ahead and treat them, but treat them robustly. Give them oral calcium along with vitamin D in the emergency department or activated vitamin D, Rocaltrol, in the emergency department. Give them IV calcium and remember to correct their other electrolyte abnormalities. When you're sending them off to their family doctor or to their consultant, remember to order the additional relevant tests that are going to aid your consultants in their further assessment of your patient's low calcium. And I think with that, we're going to wrap up. Do you have any questions at all, Dimitri? I hope I kept it simple. I wanted this to be low key, nice and easy.
No questions, but perhaps some comments, a bit of perspective on the family medicine front. First of all, I'm lucky enough that I can order an ECG in-house. So
that's excellent.
Whenever I have to deal with hypocalcemia, I'll be able to get an EKG. And you can, if you're comfortable, manage the asymptomatic patients as a family doctor, as an outpatient. But that means that really EKG is fine and you can follow them up very closely. I find that one of the more common causes, unfortunately, in family medicine is due to low magnesium, which can be caused by some drugs such as a PPI. But always check the magnesium. That's about it. Just in terms of family medicines, you can't follow them. Although it's a very good idea, and certainly when I have a low magnesium, to call your specialist. Again, I have access to internal medicine where I live, and they do a very good job. Okay? Thank you, Kevin.
Excellent. Thank you.
So it's great, and hopefully this was helpful to our listeners. Please leave any comments on our iTunes page or on our website, so much appreciated. And we'll be back with more amazing podcasts next month.